This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
When you're good to mama, mama's good to you.
I turn to you like a flower leaning toward the sun. I turn to you, 'cause you're the only one.
And when I fall down, I have to pick myself back.
This is Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Good evening and welcome. I'm Beck Dahl and you're listening to Stand Up Straight, where we aim to provide a vehicle for the allied supporters to stand up for our GLBTI community, to encourage and create greater inclusion, share stories, give advice, create dialogue, or introduce a new way of thinking. And most importantly, facilitate change towards greater acceptance of our rainbow family in all its shapes and sizes. Thank you to Daniel Mason for the afternoon and Beck for the news, the other Beck. I'm here tonight with Stephanie. Hi, Steph.
Hi, Beck.
And Clayton, who is microphoneless, but he's here with us too. We have two really special guests tonight. Their names are Sean Towner and Mike Wynn. And I was lucky enough to interview Sean when I was part of the live broadcast at the Pride game in his role as the captain of the Pegs football team. But the more I delved into these two, the more interesting I think they became. And I have got a wide list of things we want to talk to them about tonight, everything from marriage to coming out to football to Khloe Kardashian. So who knows where that might all go? I'll find any way to get the Kardashians into something, won't I? I guess what I really wanted to start with is where people might have seen you guys recently, which was this article in The Age with this catchy headline, "Gay couple to frame signed napkin instead of marriage certificate." So tell us a little bit about this. How did this all come about? What was this all for?
That was us with the big, awful photo in The Age. I can't believe how big
I think it's very handsome.
Yeah, how can you think that's an awful photo? That's a great photo.
Oh, shucks.
It makes us look grumpy and we're happy the whole day.
Actually, you do look a bit grumpy.
Well, you've got every right to be. You've got every right to be grumpy, but also, you know, obviously happy.
I was just at work one day and I got an email from Bo, who works at The Age. Just it was the day that the plebiscite was formally announced, I think. And he just asked if we wanted to have a chat about it. And just by sheer coincidence, about 2 hours before, Sean put down the deposit on our wedding location in Torquay because we got engaged June this year. So
I was going to say, there's a big bit of bling on your hand.
Yeah, and no, I have a question, a really important question around that. I am actually wondering why Mike has a diamond ring and why Sean has no diamond.
Yeah.
Because I'm the one that has a bit of flair and Sean's the big butch.
I'm the big boring one.
Okay.
Fabulous peacock.
So if he wanted to get me, he needed to cough up some diamonds.
Who bought who the ring?
He bought me the one that I've got on my finger. I bought the one that's on his engagement
finger. Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah, no, I'd rather have the diamond, though. Good for you.
Maybe when it's time for the wedding rings, you can, I don't know, mix it up a bit.
Yeah, well, Sean proposed first and
so I won.
Oh, yeah.
So, and then 3 months later, I was like, well, you know, I'm a man. I want to propose to the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. So I, on his birthday, I surprised him by getting down on one knee as well.
And did you have the ring with you when you got down on?
Yeah,
did you both full... did. So did you choose the ring, Sean? For
I did. For I think the Mike? Two best things I've done in our relationship is one, choose the ring, which worked well, and two was the wedding. Sorry, the engagement. Proposal location, which was at the Moulin Rouge in Paris.
Oh, my goodness. You are a romantic,
no,
aren't you?
No, I'm not. That's the weird thing. Mike's the romantic one. I just happened to get these two right, and I think I've set the bar far too high for the rest of our relationship.
And, Sean, just with coming back to the ring, and I'm not trying to obsess about the ring, but it is a beautiful ring. Did you kind of follow him around when he was looking in jewellery store windows and kind of say, oh, you know, what do you think of that one? Or did you just take a punt and go out and buy something that you thought was beautiful?
I took a bit of a punt. So I had like an idea of what I thought he would like, and I had a photo of it on my phone for quite a number of, I think, 2 or 3 years, and I just kept showing it to him, and he said he liked the set of the diamonds being through the middle but didn't like the colour of that ring I chose. And then I know he doesn't really like the look of yellow gold, so I went with the white gold / platinum instead, and I just took a punt and it happened to pay off.
I like that Steph and I have gone straight to the jewellery. Like, we don't want to worry about the, you know, politics of marriage equality, all this politicians.
I got my diamonds, I'm happy.
Yeah, we just want to talk about jewellery. When is the wedding?
February 2018.
Oh.
So we've got a little bit of time to relax.
You have to book these things very far in advance, don't you?
Yeah, so far. I'm already excited, but then I've realised I've got another 15 months to just calm down and I can't organise everything.
So how long have you two been together?
4 years officially, but
gosh,
I pretty much the first time I saw Sean, I was head over heels in love with him.
There is so much love in the studio, Steph.
We were both straight back then, so we're just like bros.
Well, I'm a little bit interested in that too. I've got some questions about that.
Oh, no.
Sean, if I was you, I'd probably step in and say, I thought the same of Mike.
I'm waiting patiently.
That's a bit of a lie because I met him once before.
Oh, yeah.
And the next time I met him, I said, he goes, hi, I'm Mike. I said, yes, we've met before.
Ooh.
Then that was the second time he met me that he actually
so
fell
we wouldn't
in
say
with.
It's love at first sight.
Second sight.
Definitely.
The first time he couldn't remember meeting me. So
I was just blown away.
Good recovery, Mike.
Digging uphill quick.
And I should also mention Sean and Mike have their lovely nephew Nick in the studio with us too, who's 10. Hi, Nick.
Hi.
Did you want to say hello on the radio?
Hi.
Dead into the microphone, man.
Hi.
We might ask you some questions later, Nick, about what your uncles are like. Get some dirt on them, do you reckon? Yeah. Okay, good.
I'd like to come back and hear that that coming out sort of story, really, meeting a straight guys and then ending up together right after this.
Hi, this is Adelaide, and you're listening to my mum, Stephanie, and Michelle on Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for joining us on Stand Up Straight tonight. We are in the studio with Sean Towner and Mike Wynn, who are here talking about lots of things. Beck kicked off the hour with some discussion about a recent article in The Age, and we started talking about the boys' relationship and we did get a bit bogged down in details of jewellery.
I mean, that's important stuff.
Very important stuff. But just winding it back a little bit, you mentioned, Mike, that when you had first met some years ago, 4 years ago?
We first met, it's
2009.
7 years ago.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And at that time you were both presenting as straight boys, yeah.
I couldn't get a girlfriend, but I was pretending to be straight.
I find that hard to believe. Yeah, I don't think you were really trying very hard.
No,
I know. Don't let the grumpy photo in The Age fool you. These are good-looking boys.
Talk us a little bit about how you first came out, we first met and then came out and then met again as gay men, I guess.
Well, yeah, I first met Sean when I was just 18, and so I'd just come out of high school and I was ready to, you know, shake the shackles of high school off. I just needed to get out of there. And then, you know, I was just like ready to, you know, ease into life and, you know, start to feel comfortable about myself. And then I saw Sean, I fell in love with him and I was like, oh.
I mean, why wouldn't you? Look at him.
I was like, oh, I'm not ready to fall in love.
Mike, had you come out to anyone at that stage?
No one at all.
You obviously knew that you're a gay man, but
yep.
You hadn't come out. Had you kind of admitted that to yourself? Were you comfortable with the where you were, or were you struggling a bit? What was...
I knew 100% I was gay halfway through year 7.
Right.
And so from then until the end of year 12 was just like this inner torment. I went completely inside myself. I'm sure everyone at high school had no idea what my name was. I was the quiet kid, just wanted to go, you know, under the radar.
I was going
to
say you were flying under the radar and just getting through high school.
Okay. I had, like, you know, dreams of being in school plays and everything, but I couldn't do it. I didn't want anyone to know who I was because, you know, once you're a little, you know, more visible, then people will ask questions
and they look and they,
I'm sure everyone's obsessed with my sexuality.
And were those, were those years of high school happy years for you?
Oh, I feel I couldn't say they were really terrible because I had really good friends in high school, but I know that I wasn't myself. Mm. And so when I, you know, went home and I was by myself, I knew 100% I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
But I had really good friends that, you know, on the surface, you know, I was really happy. I was, you know, I had good friends. We're going out on the weekends. We're having heaps of fun. But at the same time, there's that voice inside of your head saying, these friends don't know a thing about you, really. They like this version that you present. Will they like you when they know, you know, who you are to your core?
And did they like you when
they... Oh, God, yeah.
There you go.
I had so many more friends when I came out.
You were much cooler when you were gay.
So what advice would you give to your year 7 self?
Oh, just, you know, if you, you know, if you go inside yourself and don't, you know, let yourself be heard, you're at, like, a really good school. You've got to make the most of these opportunities. I missed out on so much. And, you know, I scraped through. I got a, you know, a score that allowed me to study what I wanted at university.
Yeah.
So I didn't miss out, you know, academically, but, you know, personally and socially, there was just this whole part of me that was missing. Mm. And it turned out to be, you know, the most unfounded fear in the world.
Mm. So, Mike, when did you come out?
I came out a month before my 20th birthday.
Okay.
And that, to me, was long enough. I was just, like, 19 years of lying every day was
exhausting,
horrendous.
I imagine.
I couldn't imagine anyone.
And who was the first person you came out to?
I half came out to my best friend. About a year before I came out, things kind of started to, you know, all crash and burn, all my lies. So I came out as bisexual, but that was only because, you know, maybe that'll be a little more, you know...
People might find it easier. Yeah,
yeah. Like, oh, I still like girls, but, you know, there's something to guys. And then, and then it was to Mum and Dad. That was the first person I told to their face that I was gay.
And what was their response?
Well, I told them about half an hour before my best friend's father's funeral.
Wow.
Okay, that's an interesting timing.
Bit of distraction.
That's what I thought. But now I look back and I was like, that is the cruelest thing I could have ever done. So Dad was standing there in his jocks and Mum's putting on her makeup and I was like, you know what, I am gay. And they're just like, what is happening? This is, you know, not what I expected. But, you know, 10 minutes later they kind of took it all in, got dressed, and they, you know, they told me they loved me and everything was fine.
So, Sean, was this story something that prompted you to write your ebook?
Yeah, so I came out about a month and a half after Mike. And I was, so what's that, 5 years ago now. So I was only 25 or 20, almost 26.
Just turned 26
when I came out. So I was quite a bit longer in terms of years after Mike, but only, you know, a month or 6 weeks after he actually came out. So, and I guess Mike and I were such good friends. We actually came out to each other kind of before we both came out to everybody else. And because we'd both gone through so much inner heartache and inner turmoil, we both had no idea how to come out to other people and, you know, how to come out to your parents. We kind of just winged it. And then, you know, the more people I sort of spoke to about their coming out story, you know, the more I realised that no one that I've met has ever regretted coming out, but I know a lot of people who have regretted not coming out sooner. And that was kind of the premise behind the book. I didn't actually intend to turn it into a book. I was just, you know, Mike being a journalist and having his own blog, he just sort of said, well, have you ever thought about putting your head on a page, what you're sort of thinking? And then it just kind of kept growing into little chapters and ideas. And then Mike helped me edit it and expand it, and it kind of turned into the book.
I read the book last night, and what really struck me was you were saying that coming out to your parents was a, I can't think of the word you used, but it was such a positive word, and it was, it sounded like to you such a positive experience, and it was, and it was really kind of heartening, I guess, to read it like that.
It was, yeah. So to be honest, I can't remember the word I used either.
It wasn't amazing, but it was a word like that. Yeah,
it was. Look, for me, it was an incredible experience because you always put this, this mindset that it's going to be worst case scenario, and you're happy with how your relationship is with a particular person or people at the time, and you think if you change that in a great way by coming out as gay, that it's going to completely change the makeup of that relationship, and you assume that's going to be bad. But it completely changed my relationship with my parents, but in a good way.
Well, I was just saying, one of my favourite parts about reading the book was when I was reading the Amazon reviews, and there was a review from your dad who said, "As Sean's father, I'm both proud and honoured to have him as a son. Had I read a book like this earlier, I may have noticed his concerns and we could have talked about them and saved him a great deal of heartache and despair." And I thought, what a beautiful family you must have for that to be, you know, for that to be your dad's words. And obviously, I guess there was challenges for him in you coming out as well. I could read in that.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing that hurt Mum and Dad the most was knowing how much I'd been hurting for, you know, the past 26 years of my life. And when I told my brother, I actually told my oldest brother first, and then he started crying. And he, it was after a friend's wedding, and he went home crying, and this little one woke up and saw Daddy crying and sort of said to Nanny, "Oh, Daddy was crying last night," and he couldn't work out why. And then the reason my brother was crying was because he goes, "Well, I didn't realise how much hurt and pain you'd been going through for the last 26 years, and I know that, you know, I would have said stuff in the past that has contributed to that, so it really hurt him."
Yeah, gosh.
And now we're all going to cry in the studio.
I'm getting a bit choked up too.
I'm the biggest sook. I cried at
So, Sean, you have got, you've got two older brothers.
I do, yes.
And was the response the same from your other brother?
Yeah. Okay. Look, they're both fantastic, and they've been, you know, my biggest supporters, and, you know, they've been so good to Mike and I as well, and, you know, they're our biggest fans completely. And Matt took the news, if you want to call it that, the exact same way, and just said, "Cool.
Well, I love you still." We are going to come back with more about weddings and plebiscites and football.
Khloe Kardashian and football, my two favourite things.
Shortly. You're on Stand Up Straight.
I'm so fancy. You already know I'm in the fast lane. From LA to Tokyo.
Hi, my name is Bella, and you're listening to Stand Up Straight with Michelle on Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Stand Up Straight. No Michelle tonight, but you've got a Beck and a Stephanie and a Clayton, so close enough. And our special guests tonight, Sean and Mike, who we have had some fascinating chats with. But tonight, because Clayton doesn't have a microphone, I can talk about football as much as I like.
But are you being inclusive, Beck?
Not when it comes to football, Steph. No, I'm not.
All right.
I'm accepting of all people's views unless they don't like football.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair. So I think I said at the start of the show, Sean, that's where I met you when I interviewed you at the Pride game. And you've been, I guess, pretty vocal in that area of talking about, you know, gay footballers and all those sorts of things. But you're the captain of a, what do we call it, amateur football side. And I suppose pretty unusual to have a out gay captain of a club?
Yeah, it is. So I came out, I guess I was the captain before I came out and since, and the club itself have been incredible, but it was one of the most nervous things I've ever done, having to come out to my teammates, because when I was growing up, football was both the best thing in my life and the worst thing in my life. You know, I was able to be myself out on the football field and take all that, you know, that internal aggression and that sort of stuff that you have, and, you know, just throw yourself into a pack and crash into bodies, and that was my release. But when I came off the field and I saw all my teammates bringing their partners and, you know, the wags to football functions, I always knew I'd never be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because in my mind, I thought, well, I'd never be able to come out and bring a man to these functions because, you know, they won't like it. You can't have a gay football player. And
So it was the worst thing for me as well, and it kind of it really tainted, you know, my favourite thing in the world, which is to play football. Mm.
How do you come out to a football club? Is it, you know?
And when do you come out? Yeah. And why do you come out? I mean, if you were, yeah.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a something I thought I necessarily had to do to the football club. It was more of a when I was able to admit it to myself and finally come to the opinion that someone else's opinion of me is none of my business.
Mm.
Yeah, and when I kind of, when that finally sunk in, I just eventually said, you know, well, bugger it, I am who I am, and if you don't like me for that, then you know you're not really my friend. And coming out to my family first and then to a couple of my best friends who I play football with, they, and I had the open discussion with them saying, well, how do you think the players will take it? And they go, mate, you'll be fine, the guys love you anyway, nothing will change. And having that conversation with a few of the guys in the football club who were my close friends as well, that really helped. And it wasn't like I stood up with a foot, a big feather boa, and in front of everybody.
Yeah, next week we're playing the Bombers, and yeah. I'm gay.
Hey guys, yeah. I'm tearing an ass out of my shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was just I told a few of the players, and I just said, look, you know, just can you just filter it out there for me? And you know, I don't want to do this sort of.
So there was no announcement. There was no real announcement. It was just.
I didn't think it was necessary to do an announcement. It was more of a, if someone asked me the question, I'd answer it honestly this time.
And did you get endorsement from all of your team members, like on the?
Absolutely. Yeah. So after telling a few of my best friends, and they went and just sort of, you know, filled the word out, I think just about every person at the club individually came up at some point over the next month or so and just shook my hand, gave me a hug and said, you know, I'm so proud of you, or, you know, well done. And I always took that, like, it was so nice that they were certainly trying to do a nice thing, but I never really saw it as being brave or something that needed to be praised and said, oh, you know, you're so brave to do that, because I don't think it's necessarily brave. It's just coming to terms with something that you haven't been able to come to terms with before.
I think it is brave, though. I think, you know, admitting something that you've had this great fear about and this internal kind of conflict is brave. I think it's good to...
It's
to understand that.
Yeah, that's quite true. I just don't like self-praise.
No.
And is there, I haven't read Cleaning Out My Closet, but is there a chapter in there on how to come out to a team?
There's a chapter in there about how to come out to your close friends, not necessarily a team. So maybe in volume two I'll do the...
I think we need that there. Because, you know, I just find it astounding that in 2016 we still don't have an out AFL player.
Absolutely.
And what's that about?
I honestly think it's because there will be a media circus around a player when they come out, but I think the AFL until recently hasn't really shown that they were ready for a player to come out in terms of the actual support network. You know, the work of guys like Jason and Matt Finnis from St Kilda, they're starting to show that yes, the AFL is ready for a gay footballer, because the support network is going to be there. Prior to this year, even up until last year, the support network from a player's perspective, that they wouldn't have thought it was there for them to actually be supported.
And that to me was one of the most beautiful parts of that Pride game night. And absolutely. I really do call it was beautiful, because it was one of the most amazing experiences. And it was that really supportive kind of environment. And I thought, gosh, I really hope that, even if it's not an AFL player, if there's a under-15s kid absolutely. That says, wow, footy, my game that I love, is welcoming and accepting of me, like, what a tiny thing to make a huge difference.
Bang on. And that's the thing. It's never been that visible that the AFL is supportive, and the fear of the unknown, you know, stops you from actually doing things, and that's the kind of thing from a player's perspective they wouldn't want to go, well, oh, geez, am I going to be, you know, mocked by supporters? Are my supporters or are my teammates in my club going to support me if someone does? And I liken it to the whole racial discussion as well.
Yeah,
and it's the same thing. I mean,
Adam Goods
can no more choose his race than Mike and I can choose our sexuality. And you sort of see the reaction from supporters in the crowd when they hear someone racially vilify Adam Goods. You know, they jump on it now, and I think that. We're not quite there with sexuality, but I think we're kind of getting to that point.
Sean, I wonder too, you play amateur football, and you know, we kind of are throwing some blame onto the AFL. What about team managers? What sort of pressure does an AFL player have from a support group around him?
Short answer, without being an AFL player, I can't answer that exactly accurately, but I would assume that their brand of an AFL team, you know, from a team manager's perspective, they wouldn't want, you know, any perceived negativity around their brand. So without them openly showing support for you know, LGBT rights, an AFL player might go, oh, geez, this, you know, my team manager might not be okay with someone who's gay. Therefore, they might think that I'm affecting their brand. Therefore, I can't come out, kind of thing.
Yeah, so I just wonder about, you know, there's obviously there's all that sort of internal pressure, but what are the external pressures like? You know, are there sponsors and managers and, you know, other things that people have to consider?
Well, I think there 100% would be. I mean, AFL, it's a business now. I mean, it's not just a local game with Carlton playing the suburban team of Collingwood. It's a business, and there are profits to be made. You can tell by the new bargaining agreements that the AFL are going through.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's, you know, billions of dollars that are at stake in terms of marketing.
Yeah.
You know, there are decisions to be made, but I don't think that should, you know, stop someone from being supportive.
Being who they are.
And being who they are.
And Mike, I want to ask you a question, because the partner of the captain of an AFL club is a very important role.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Head wag.
Yeah, chief wag.
Chief wag. Sorry.
The chief wag.
Tell me about being chief wag.
You have to be dressed up very well. All eyes are on you. The camera lenses are generally pointed at you the most at functions. And you're pretty much the belle of the ball, which I've taken on quite well, I think.
You strike me as a man that would take that on well. And are the other wags inclusive of you? Has there ever been a, you know, oh, this is a girls thing and there's a bloke coming along? Or?
Oh, God, no. No, I was terrified going to my first game. I was still chief wag, but I didn't know it yet. But, no, I walked in and the girls just flocked to me, and they were the sweetest things. They've been just as sweet for the last 4 years. And they have an annual ladies' day lunch, and I get invited to that. And the organiser texts me before the event this year, and she's like, oh, I feel so bad, we've called it the ladies' day lunch, do you want us to call it the partner's lunch? I was like, oh, please, I'm happy to be a lady just for a day. I'm
but at least they're aware of that, and
they're
thinking of, you know, how they can make you feel included all the time.
Yeah, no, I'm more than happy to be going to a ladies' lunch. I'm just, you know, happy to get the invite, really. I think it's really nice of them.
And I think that's people kind of slag off football and sport, I think, and, you know, it's this macho, homophobic, whatever. But stories like that of clubs that are really inclusive, and they're stories that you hear quite often now. I think that whole homophobic, manly kind of whatever is a bit passe.
Yeah, and it's because, it's from my perspective, it's when you have a connection to it, it changes your perspective as well. And, yeah, I think the Pegs Footy Club have been fantastic for it.
Well, I'm going to try and drag Beck off football after this break. You are on Joy 94.9.
Be an ally. Talk it out. Educate yourself. Stand up straight on Joy 94.9.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Stand Up Straight. In the studio we have Sean Towner and Mike Wynn, along with Beck and Clayton pushing all of our buttons for us.
In a good way.
In a good way, yes.
I'll try harder.
We have been talking footy, we have been talking wedding rings. We haven't really talked about marriage, but I know that that's something on the agenda in February, and I know that you, both of you, are active in campaigning for marriage equality. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that, Mike, what your involvement has been?
Yeah, well, I guess it started just, you know, with everyday conversations with our parents, with our friends, just people who didn't really understand what marriage meant to someone who wasn't allowed to get married. So it was just, you know, an everyday conversation. Sean and I would just write about it, you know, on blogs and everything. And then when it came to us finally being ready to get married, we realised that, you know, we weren't going to be held back just by some law that we, you know, we don't agree with. So it's not going to, you know, put a hold on our lives. So when Sean proposed, we said to ourselves, you know, legal or not, we're going to set a date and we're going to get married. And, you know, as that Age article put, you know, if we can't sign a marriage certificate, we're just going to sign a napkin, and it's real enough for us.
Because marriage isn't about what's legal, I guess, for you guys. That's not the important part.
No, we say, like, how many times have you gone to someone's wedding and, you know, you rush up to the bride and say, oh, can we see the marriage certificate?
It's so true.
There's so many other things.
You do know what Steph and I did at the start of the show and say, show us the ring.
Yeah, so it's, you know, we're going to have a traditional, you know, as traditional a wedding as we can. You know, there'll be two dudes at the end of the aisle, but, you know, we're going to do vows, we're going to dance, we're going to drink a tiny little bit.
And will you write your own vows?
Yeah, well, because I'm a writer, everyone's put all this pressure on me. They're like, oh, you're going to have the most beautiful vows. And I was like, oh, no.
You're like, am I?
I've got a year to get this right and I'm petrified.
That's right. I wanted to pick up on something you said before about in talking to family and friends about not realising how important marriage was to people that couldn't do it. And yeah, it's something that I've really become more and more aware of lately, and I guess probably through this whole plebiscite debate, that I've always said, oh, I don't want to get married. Mm. And I thought, God, how bloody rich of me to say that when I can. Like, I think that, is that hurtful that you, you know, you're, that people, straight people think that, or is it, you know?
No, we wouldn't say, like, that's certainly not hurtful. I mean, everyone's got their own opinion and everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and you've got the right to do what you like. The thing that offends us, what's the TV show we hate? Married at First Sight. Like, things like that. Yeah. That's that kind of offends us when you're bringing two people who have no idea who they are and getting married for the sake of it. That's the kind of thing that kind of rubs it in your face a little bit.
But God forbid we get married.
Two people that two are people desperately in love with each other. Yeah.
And been together for 4.5 years, and there's LGBTIQ couples out there who have been together for 40 years who haven't been able to get married and have been through some atrocities in their time and are just such, you know, we look up to those people so much. And to have a TV show that kind of throws that in their face, that's what offends us. But for a straight person who doesn't want to get married, my dad says, what would you get married for? He says himself.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. In this famous Age article, Mike, one thing you said was that you briefly supported the plebiscite initially. Mm. And that's something I think I've heard from a lot of LGBTIQ people, is that originally I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it was seen as the only way forward. Yeah. And then was it then upon further analysis of the damage, I guess, that it could do, that you changed your mind?
A complete, you know, uneducated support. I just thought, you know, good old Abbott is giving us a way to get married.
Mm.
The public has to vote. I trust the public. You know, you've seen the number that, you know, at least 70% of Australians support it. And I was like, yeah, you know, we'll just have a quick vote. It'll all be great. And, you know, then I'll get married. And then, you know, you delve into it and it's going to cost $170 million. They're giving millions of dollars to people to fund a no, you know, a yes and a no campaign. Mm. And then you just think about it. You're like, oh, well, I can barely look at Twitter because people are so rude on there. Yeah. Imagine, you know, watching My Kitchen Rules and all of a sudden it's like, down with the gays who want to get married, you're going to ruin our future. I just think the hatred it's going to spew would just be exhausting and it could just do a lot of damage. I really believe that.
Yeah, and I think you said in the article too that mental health impacts for, I guess, young and also not so young LGBTI people are massive.
Yeah, well, you know, I was bullied at school and that was, you know, two or three people and it scarred me for life. You know, you move on from it, but it's always going to be a part of you. Could you imagine, you know, reading articles in the newspaper and hearing on the radio just bullying every day about how wrong, you know, two men who are in love are? The thought terrifies me of what it could do to these really susceptible people, no matter what age they are.
Mm, so I imagine quite a relief to you that it was voted down.
So as marriage equality advocates, where do you go from here? I mean, obviously we've had plebiscite news this week. And
yeah, well, it's the free vote, or the conscience vote, whatever it's really called. It seems the most logical way, but God forbid politicians ever do the logical thing. But,
That's right.
You know, we'd love to see that. Ideally, we'd love to be able to get legally married come February 2018. But, you know, if it has to wait to the next election, if that's the only way it's going to, you know, get through, then, you know, we have to wait. But, you know, I really think the people we elect to, you know, be in our parliament and do what the country wants from them, I really think they can just, you know, put their minds together and maybe just have a little vote and
you'd think so, wouldn't you? You would think so.
Well, it seems easy.
Back in 2004, I had a quote that I wrote down from John Howard when they changed the Marriage Act back in 2004. And I'll read it. So John Howard said on the 27th of May, "We've decided to insert this into the Marriage Act to make it very plain that it is our view of marriage and to also make it very plain that the definition of a marriage is something that should rest in the hands, ultimately, of the Parliament of the Nation."
Hmm.
He told that to journalists. And here we are, 12 years later with, the same government.
Mm. Yeah, different leaders, but same government.
Different leaders, same government, saying, no, it should be a people's vote. They didn't take a people's vote to change it 12 years ago. Why would you take a people's vote now?
And, you know, I don't remember a lot of press around that change.
Zero.
That was just snuck through. I don't remember anything around that.
No. It was middle of May, just a slip through, no big press about it, nothing. You try and remove that same sentence from the Act and, you know, you get what we've got now.
5 years later, we're still trying to do it.
Absolutely.
It's crazy. Now, I really have to ask this question, Mike. Picking up on you talking about things on Twitter. Now, I found on your Twitter today, Khloe Kardashian, one of my personal heroes, tweeted something you wrote. Can you please tell me this story and how this can happen to me?
It did happen after I got engaged, but I have to say that was one of the happiest moments of my life.
Oh, my God. Like, you are... Anyone who listens to this show will know my love for the Kardashians is deep and abiding. So please tell me all about it.
Well, I follow all the Kardashians on Twitter. Please try not to judge me, Australia.
By judge, I mean support and celebrate.
You know, they could be doing far worse things in the world than what they're doing. And she just tweeted out, you know, be on my website with your essays, yada, yada, yada. Just email me at chloe.com or something. And I was like, oh, well, I'd just written this piece that I put out on my blog about how being recently engaged in this political climate, what that kind of felt like and what it meant for my future. And I was like, oh, I quite like that piece. And I was just sitting at work, copied it from my blog, emailed it to her, you know, the site she said. And then 3 days later, her management emailed me back and was like, Chloe would love to post this. Can you send us a photo? So I spent the next hour trying to find the most perfect photo of myself. And then 5 days later, it was, just came up on Twitter at 5 in the morning and it woke me up and I didn't sleep for the next 24 hours.
Oh, my God.
So, Mike, was the photo just of you or did you have you and Sean both together in the photo?
Good question.
It was just of me. This was my moment.
And you know what? Take it. Take it. There were so many comments on it too. Like it must have. There must have been million. I mean, she has something million followers.
Yeah. I just think the best thing that happened was it went on her app or whatever they do. But I said to them, oh, you know, here it is. This is probably over the word limit. If you want to send them to my blog, put the link at the bottom. And they put the link at the bottom. So I had all these thousands of her followers going to my page and reading it and supporting it and sending me these lovely emails. And it was, I am deeply in gratitude to the Kardashians.
When we come back, we are going to get some details of that blog and we are also going to get details of cleaning out my closet. Stay with us.
You are listening to Stand Up Straight on Joy 94.9 with Beck, Stephanie and Clayton and our absolutely lovely guest, Sean, who I already loved, and Mike, who I love more now than I know he's friends with Khloe Kardashian.
Yay.
So, you know.
Yeah, so just before we finish up tonight, what is the name of your blog so we can all be part of...
It's writeforyourfight.com, so W-R-I-T-E for your fight, not the number four, F-O-R.
And Sean... Your ebook that everybody should read.
It's called Cleaning Out My Closet, a real life guide to coming out to family and friends.
And it was such a good book. I wanted to give it to people. I mean, I couldn't because it was on my Kindle.
But you can. Theory. You can e-gift it. You can. Yes, you can. Christmas is coming.
I'm learning so much.
There you go.
And have you had a really good reaction to that, Sean? Have people said, you know, this was really helpful for me? Or?
It was so good. So it's been out for quite a while, but I hadn't checked the comments in a while. And I can't remember what it was, but I went back and read one of them. And it was from a 65-year-old grandfather who read it and was moved that much by it that he came out himself. It was the most... incredible... post, and he sent me an email as well, the most incredible moment, and I just went, well, you know, that's why, you know, that alone was worth the price of admission for me. It was incredible.
That's 65. Amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
And the beauty, I guess, of the ebook is it just sits there and people can pick it up and find it, and they don't have to go into a bookshop and buy it.
Exactly.
That's, I think, the really good thing about it, that people feel uncomfortable. It's just on their Kindle or their whatever. No one knows.
And that's, like, the hardest thing for a kid who, you know, a 15-year-old kid who might be questioning to go in and try and buy that book. It's a hard copy.
Yeah.
But he's not going to go into Dimmicks.
He's not going to Dimmicks and buy it, but it's an ebook, you know.
Absolutely. Now, I mentioned at the start, we've had another very special guest in the show tonight who is Sean and Mike's nephew, Nick. Nick, I want to ask you a couple of questions. How have you enjoyed your first time in a radio studio?
Yeah, good, thank you.
And what would you give Sean and Mike out of 10 for what they've done tonight?
20.
He's getting ice cream on the way.
Now, I know, I was going to say, you wanted ice cream on the way home, so is that why they're getting 20? No?
We're just brilliant.
And they're good uncles?
Yes.
Yeah. You're proud of them?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your favourite thing about them?
That they love me and they always will.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Steph and I haven't cried enough. You're getting two ice creams now. Well, it has been a wonderful show.
It has been a wonderful show, Beck.
Thank you so much for coming in, guys. We have enjoyed every minute. I think we could have probably talked for another hour or so. Would you come back again?
Love to.
I thought we were just in for 10 minutes. I can't believe an hour's gone.
I know.
It's been amazing. We've got a bit of Beyonce, a bit of football, a bit of the Kardashians.
Nick said he'd love to come back as well.
Oh, you can come back.
Oh, Nick, you're welcome anytime.
I reckon next time we might get Nick and Sean's dad in.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
The dream team. Yeah. What do you reckon? And we can interview them.
Poppy in.
Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight. Let's stand up straight. Thanks, Steph.
Thanks, Beck.
Thanks, Clayton, for pushing our buttons in a good way. Up next is another wonderful show on Joy Family Matters. Good night.
Is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.